Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Ayin Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins on Daf Ayin Beis, 15 lines from the top. In order to find it, you can estimate approximately almost the middle of the page. You'll see a posuk from Bamidbar Yud Tes, posuk Tes Zayin, quoted the line afterwards. In our previous discussion, we made reference to Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. That you can see a few lines above on Daf Ayin Beis, and this was with reference to the midwife inserting her hand into a pregnant woman and touching a dead fetus. We had seen that there was an issue whether the midwife would become tome. The general sugya we had been dealing with was tuma balua. It was pointed out that the tuma that the midwife absorbed was a tuma de rabbanan, and that was presented as far as shitas Rabbi Shmuel, because according to Rabbi Akiva, the ubar would communicate tuma on a d'oraisa level. It's with at that point that we are now picking up today's shiur, my Rabbi Shmuel, umay Rabbi Kiva. That's the Gemara, 15 lines from the top. What is the source in which Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva are found? Desanya. Now we have a Tanaic source in which the names Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva are highlighted, they are underlined, and the basis for their approaches. The pasuk says, "V'chol asher yiga al pnei hasadeh." Now, this pasuk is in the context of tumas meis in the Torah, in Parshas Chukas, in Sefer Bamidbar. And this pasuk, as far as Rabbi Shmuel is concerned, "Lahoitzi ubar b'mei isha," divrei Rabbi Shmuel. The pasuk mentions contact with something that's al pnei hasadeh, on the face of the earth. In other words, something visible that would communicate tuma. However, the ubar, the dead fetus, touched by the midwife, that's not considered al pnei hasadeh. And as a result of that, Rabbi Shmuel says that from a Torah's perspective, there would be no tuma. And that in our previous sukkah, we explained why, according to Rabbi Shmuel, there is tuma communicated midrabbanan on a rabbinic level. Rabbi Akiva Omer l'rabois goylo v'doifek. Rabbi Akiva uses this pasuk to include goylo v'doifek. Goylo v'doifek are, according to Rashi's pshat, Tosfos in Ksubas disagrees with this pshat, but according to Rashi's pshat, the goylo is the covering of a coffin, and the doifek are the sides. And according to Rabbi Kiva, the Golel v'dofek also communicate Tumas Meis. Rabbi Kiva is not learning like Rabbi Shmuel, because as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, there is no exclusion of the Ubar, because the Ubar does communicate Tuma to one who touches it, like as the case of the midwife. We mentioned in our previous shiur, with the exception of the mother herself, there, the mother herself carrying this dead fetus is not Tameya, and that's because the contact made between her and the Ubar is through what's called Beis Hastorim, a covered part of the body. So she remains Tahora until the child is actually born, comes out. But the midwife her contact is with her hand, which is not a covered part of her body, and just because the fetus is contained within its balua, as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, there is no exemption of tumah as a result of balua. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Shmuel Goylo v'doifek, Hilchasa Gemiri La. As far as Rabbi Shmuel is concerned, the golel and dofek, the parts of the coffin, do communicate tumah, but based on an oral tradition, halacha l'moshe misinai, referred to by the Gemara as hilchisa. For Rabbi Akiva, ubar b'mei isha, tamei midoraisa, minole. For Rabbi Akiva, that an ubar b'mei isha, the fetus inside the mother, the fetus that's dead, communicates tumah on a Torah level. From where does he know that? Omar Voshaya, Omar Kro, Hanogea Bemeis Benefesh, and the Pasuk goes on to say, Benefesh Ha'adam Asher Yomus. But the emphasis, you can see, in the emphasis as far as the Gemara is concerned, is on the words, one who touches Bemeis Benefesh. Benefesh means inside Nefesh Ha'adam, inside a person. So, Ezehu Meis She Benefesh Shel Adam. What is an example of a mace of something dead inside of a person? Heve omer ze ubar shebemei isha. That is the example of the dead fetus. And this pasuk is telling you that contact with that communicates tumas mace. So there's the basis for Rabbi Akiva. For Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel says that contact with the dead fetus on the part of the midwife does not communicate tumah on a Torah level. So hi, mi boyalei l'raviyas dam habo min hames shemetama. He needs it for something else. He needs it for for another halacha, namely, a raviyas is a liquid quantity. It's a small amount, a relatively small amount of blood that comes from a corpse. A raviyas dam that comes from a corpse, a mace, is metama. In other words, it communicates tumas mace, just like a body communicates tumas mace, or an olive quantity of corpse flesh communicates tumas mace. So too, a revius dam from a mace. And shenemar, the pasuk says, hanogea b'mace b'nefesh ha'adam. That's the same pasuk we saw with just above. Ezehu nefesh shel adam shemetame. What is the life breath of a person that communicates tumah? This concept of nefesh we'll get back to in a minute. This what is the life of a person that communicates tumah? Haveyomer zu revius dam. There's a certain understanding that one finds in the Shas, in different places in the Gemara, that if a person loses a lot of blood, he could be sustained on a revius dam. In other words, a revius dam is considered by the Gemara the minimum amount of blood for a person to survive on, to at least be considered alive. I don't know about how, at what level of functioning, but considered alive. This is a concept that's reflected in the Gemara. I'm not sure I'm expressing it with total accuracy, but the idea is that life, a certain level of life, can be maintained with a revius of dam. Hence the term nefesh being like life breath of an individual. What is the life breath of an individual contained with individual on which he could survive? That's a revius dam. So, and this is what Rabbi Yishmael sees in this pasuk, Hanogea b'meis b'nefesh ha'adam. For Rabbi Akiva, l'tamei. Now, Rabbi Akiva has a unique shita with regard to blood from the dead, and as a result of his shita, this pasuk doesn't address the issue of dam. The Omar, let's read this again, Rabbi Akiva, l'tamei. Rabbi Akiva is consistent with what he holds on this topic, and in his not using this pasuk for a revius of dam. The Omar Rabbi Akiva holds af revius dam habo mishnei mesim mitame ba'oihel. If you have a sum total of one revius of blood from the dead, however, it came from two it came from two different corpses, let's say a half a revius from one corpse and a half a revius from another corpse, so that you have now a total of one revius, but it came from two different dead individuals, that as well would be mitame bo'ehel. And therefore, the pasuk which mentions benefesh adam in the singular doesn't address shitas Rabbi Akiva, because as far as shitas Rabbi Akiva, it can come not from nefesh, but nafshos. And this will be featured now in the source, Desanya. Rabbi Kiva Omer, minayin l'rviyas dam habo mishnei meisim shemetame bo'el. From where does one know that blood that comes from two corpses, a total of one reviyas that comes from two corpses, it communicates tumas oyel, tuma through being in the same room or same overhang, ta shenemar, we say under the same overhang. Shenemar v'al kol nafshois meis lo yavoi. Now in this pasuk, which is also a warning against contact with tumas meis in the case of kohanim, kohanim are warned against becoming tomei through tumas meis. The pasuk uses the plural nafshos, and Rabbi Kiva interprets this as shtei nefashos v'shiur echad, two individuals, two people, and one quantity, one revius coming from the one revius of blood coming from the corpses of two people will communicate tumas meis. The Mishnah, behemo hamekasha lele v'hotzi ubor es yadoi v'chotcha. We have discussed topics like this in the past of animals that are in the process of giving birth. And the it's not a smooth one-shot birth, as the word mekashe would indicate, difficulty. And if the fetus extends an arm or a leg, and the owner cuts off the leg, the achakach shochat es imoi, and after the projected leg was severed, then the mother was slaughtered, tohor. The animal is not tomei. There's no communication of tuma, even though the extended leg itself is not going to be eaten because it was outside of the mother when the shechita took place. We have learned these sugyas extensively already in the past, so we're going to be relying on your familiarity with these concepts from previous gemaras. But as far as this case is concerned, even though the leg is forbidden to be eaten because it was outside of the mother when the mother animal was slaughtered, nevertheless it does not communicate tuma. And Rashi explains, because when that leg was extended, the mother was still alive, and a behemo is not mekabel tuma, doesn't absorb tuma when it is alive. And so that the leg had been extended and removed and cut and severed while the mother was still alive, so it doesn't pose any tuma threat. However, shochat es imoi, a cow, a pregnant cow with a fetal extended leg, was shechted. The mother was shechted while the leg was hanging out. The achaka chotcha, and then cut off the leg, knowing full well that the leg anyway will not be allowed to be eaten. He cut off the leg, but after the mother was shechted. So the leg was extended while the mother, at a point that the mother was already not alive anymore. Afterwards, the leg was cut off. Habosar magen avela divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that the rest of the cow is said to have contact with nevela. In other words, he views the extended leg as having contact with, in effect, something called Eiver Min Achai. If we look in the Rashi, Habosar Magen Nevela, Basar HaUbar, the rest of the fetus that had direct contact with its own leg that had been extended, is Mago Eiver Min Achai. Shehu mitame kinevela. Eiver min achai literally is the limb from a living creature. If one walks up to a cow and rips off a leg while it's alive, that's called eiver min achai. And Eifer Men Achai has a din of Nevela. It communicates Tumah, as Nevela would communicate Tumah, Nevela being a dead animal. Inami im ubar mace Nevela gemura have ho Eifer Me'achar shelo taroso shchitas imo. Another possibility is that the ubar itself was already dead, so the contact would be with what's called Nevela gemura, not just Eifer Men Achai. But as far as Rebbe Meir is concerned, this extended leg communicates Tumah, as he indicates, Mago Nevela, contact with Nevela. V'chachomim omrim, the Chachomim disagree with Rebbe Meir and say, Mago Trefa Shchuta, the said leg creates contact, or is represented as having contact with trefa. In other words, the leg is viewed as trefa and slaughtered trefa. This is an idea that will be dealt with later in the Gemara, but we look at Rashi, three lines from the bottom. Maga trefa shchuta, shashchita, afal pi she'eino materes o'ever b'achila, the slaughtering of the mother, even though it doesn't enable the leg to be eaten. As we mentioned before, once the leg exits the mother before the mother is shechted, the leg becomes unfit for eating. Nevertheless, the shchita is mitaroso midei nevela. It purifies or cancels the nevela status from setting in. V'havya ketrefa shchuta she'ena mitamim in haTorah, and therefore it's no worse than a case of having slaughtered a trefa animal. Trefa is an animal that's unfit to be eaten, but it does not communicate tumah. Therefore, there is no tumah on a Torah level over here. There is tumah that's communicated to the rest of the fetus, but on a rabbinic level, and only if we are dealing with sacrifices. And the Rabbanan continue their comment, arguing, Ma motzinu betrefa, Shishchitasa mitarasa, just like there's precedent for something that even though it's osur to eat, it's forbidden to eat, the shchita is effective in preventing the tumah from setting in, and that's the case of the slaughtering of a standard trefa animal. Trefa is an animal that has some type of organ deficiency. The common example is a hole in its lung. Yet, when you shecht it, when you slaughter it, it is not mitame. Af shchitas behemo titaher es ho'ever. So too, the shchita of the mother will prevent tumah from setting in as a result of the extended leg of the fetus. Omar lohem Rabbi Meir, loy. Rabbi Meir responds to the Rabbana, Rabbi Meir holding that there is tumah, there's tumas nevela here, as a result of this leg that was extended and remained attached after the mother was shechted, says that is what they said is not to be is not an argument. He says back to the Rabbonin, in tiara shchitas trefa oisa davar shigufa. I understand that shchita can help to prevent tumah as a result of something that's inherent to the mother herself, the animal itself that's being shechted. Tetaher es ha'ever, davar she'eino gufa, but how can you expect the shchita of this mother with the fetal extended fetal leg to metaher it when the leg is not part of the mother itself? It's a fetus, it's a baby growing in the mother, but it's not the mother herself. So it's since it's a one step removed, it's a little bit let's say less related. So I'm not sure. So Rabbi Meir says I don't see the case of shchitas trefa being a precedent for this also being considered tahar. Uminayin l'trefa shishchitasa mitarasa. From where do we know that the slaughtering of a trefa does prevent tumah from setting in? The Mishnah goes on to say that if you applied pure logic, you would actually come out saying otherwise. You would say that trefa should not be effective in preventing tumas nevela. Behema tamea asura b'achila, af trefa asura b'achila. A horse is an example of a behema tamea, an unkosher variety animal, is something that's forbidden to eat. So to a trefa, which involves kosher variety animals that have organ deficiencies, are also forbidden to eat. Ma behema tamea ein shchitasa mitarasa, just like in the case of a behema tamea, shchita does not remove tumah from it. Like if one slaughtered a horse, it would still mitame as nevela. Af trefa lo titarena shchita. So to trefa, one could argue the shchita does not mitahir it. So as far as this stage of argument, one would say that behema, that the slaughtering of a trefa would not result in tahara. Loi, but this is rejected. Im amris bebehema tamea, if you say that shchita is ineffective in creating tahara by an unkosher variety animal, shelohoisa lo shas hakosher, it was something that never had the ability to be eaten. It was from its inception, it was a forbidden creature. Toimar b'treifa shoisa lo shas hakosher. Should you say the same thing with regard to a treifa that had a moment of allowance? In other words, before the lung developed a hole, it was a totally fine kosher type creature. So this would be an argument in favor of, let's say, a trefa achieving tahara through shchita, because it's unlike the behema tamea. But to this, the Gemara, the Mishnah responds, tu l'cho mashe vesa, take back that which you brought in. In other words, you tried to bring out proof from the case of trefa having had a shasa kosher. Hare shenolda trefa min abeten minayin. What about a case of an animal born with a hole in its lung? It did not have a shas hakosher. It didn't have a point at which it would have been allowed. So to this we respond, loi, that's not a problem. Im amris bevehema tamea, if you say by behema tamea that shchita does not help, that's shekein ein bemina shchita, within the variety called behema tamea, within the realm of behema tamea, mino, within the whole realm of behema tamea, there is no precedence for shchita being effective. Toimar betrefa sheyesh bemina shchita, within the realm of trefa, there is a precedent for shchita. In other words, even though in the case of an animal born after a full-term pregnancy, but it's born with a hole in its lung, so that doesn't necessarily mean that shchita is not applicable, because regarding all other full-term pregnancy animals that are born healthy, even though later they develop a hole, they had a shasa kosher. So the Mishnah goes on to say, however, ben shmoina chai ein shchitoso mitaroso. Ben shmoina chai is an animal that didn't experience a full-term pregnancy. Instead of a 9-month pregnancy, which is characteristic of cows, it experienced only 8 months. The shchita of such a newborn would not mitire it, wouldn't prevent nevela from setting in. Lefi she'ein bemino shchita. Within the realm of incomplete pregnancies, there is no precedent for shchita being effective, because it's a realm, it's a whole area in which the thing would not ordinarily live. The Gemara now begins, but before learning the Gemara, let's glance at the nosei, the topic heading that we have in the outside margin. One of the features of the Shas Ozer are our attempting to present synopses or titles to sugyas, and they're found under the heading nosei. And we've written Hotzi es yodoi v'achar kach shochat imo, a fetus that extended its leg and then you slaughtered the mother, v'achar kach chotach hayad, and then the arm or the leg that was extended was then cut off. Eich lefi Rabbi Meir hayad mitames ubar. How is it, according to Rabbi Meir, that the arm that was extended communicates tuma to the rest of the fetus? Halo maga besa storim hi. The point of contact between the leg and the rest of the embryo, the point of contact is covered up. It's within the tissue matter of the limb, the internal tissue matter where the limb is attached to the body. That's covered up. We made a brief reference to this earlier in our shiur, that contact with base hastorim, a covered area, does not communicate tumah. So that is the opening of the Gemara. Amai, why is it that the ubar is tomei, according to Rabbi Meir? Tumas beis hastorim hi. The point of contact is covered. The tumas beis hastorim lo mitamya, and contact with beis hastorim doesn't communicate tumah. So, lema Rabbi Meir litamei. Should we say that Rabbi Meir, in saying that the ubar is tomei, is consistent with his shita, with his we'll call personal shita, that tumas beis hastorim is communicated? Tuma can be communicated through points of contact that are covered or attached. Disnan. We have a Tanaic source that deals with fabrics. Shloisha al shloisha shenechlak. If you have a piece of fabric that measures 3 by 3 tfochim, 3 by 3 tfochim is something that's fit for using as, let's say, a mat or to sit on. That's called, in the realm of Tuma, it's called medris. And you have something, a piece of fabric, 3 by 3 tfochim, that a zav had once sat on. The zav is a type of tuma where a person experienced something being exuded or emitted from his body, and when that emission takes place, he becomes classified as a zav, and as such, when he sits on things designed for sitting or reclining, that item becomes what's called a medris. If you want to remember the word medris, you can always think of the English word mattress, which is very similar, and it refers to something that you recline on or sit on. So a piece of fabric that has 3 by 3 tfochim in dimension is something eligible to becoming a medris. And in fact, we have that here, but it was then split or torn in half. Tohor min hamedris, even though when it was complete, when it was 3 by 3, it had tumas medris, which we should point out is a very high level of tuma. Tumas medris is something that if it touches a person or vessels, they will become tomei. So it's considered a type of tuma chamura, something of a severe level of tuma. It can metama even a person. Lower levels of tuma cannot communicate their tuma to people. For example, something that's a rishon lutuma, if it touches a person, it does not affect the person. It will affect food, for example, but not people. This, however, is a stage above a rishon. It's called an av hatuma. It's a medris. When it's torn in half, so it no longer, the fabric, any given piece of fabric, no longer has the minimum shiur of medris, 3 by 3 tfachim. Havol, the source goes on to say, "Metamen maga medris, divrei Rabbi Meir." It has a status of something that had come into contact with a medris. So that if you're looking at these pieces of fabric that now measure, let us say, 3 by 1.5 tfachim, as opposed to its original 3 by 3, once it's torn in half, it's 3 by 1.5. It is said to have had contact with the medris, but is no longer the shiur of medris, but it's maga medris. And it, as such, it would be something capable of communicating tuma to food. Now, you'll ask, the fabric where did the fabric, where did these halves of the 3x3, where did these halves touch a medrash? You'll have to say, basically, it touched itself. But the point of contact of these halves of fabric now were, we'll call it internal contact. And yet, Rabbi Meir says that they are tomei. They're tomei maga medrash. Vitanya om Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi disagrees with Rabbi Meir, and he says, v'chi be'eza medrash nogazeh. This fabric, with what medrash did it have contact with? Ella. In other words, the zav that may have sat on it originally, making the original fabric a medrash, the point of contact, though, was, we'll say, was within the each strand of material that is now cut in half. But the point of contact was within the strand, so to speak. That's beis hastorim, and that wouldn't communicate tumah to the halves on the grounds of having contact with a medrash. However, Rabbi Yossi says, Eloshim noga bozav, shein tomei magozav. If you have this, let's say, piece of fabric that had contact with a zav in the sense that he touched it, that fabric then becomes, in addition to, if you say, let us say, a zav sat on it, but another zav also touched it, then the touching of the zav, it's not a function of his reclining on it, but it's a function of his having touched it, tumas maga, so that makes the fabric tome with this additional or different form of tuma. It's not a reclining communication, it's not a function of it being laid upon, but having the zav having touched it. For tumas mago hazav, there, even if it's less than 3x3 tfachim, it becomes tome. Therefore, the fact that it's torn in half doesn't remove the tumas mago hazav from it. So if you want to talk about it being tome, even once it's torn apart, you can talk about that. You can mention that according to Rabbi Yossi, if Azav had touched it. If we look in Rashi, Rashi in the wide lines, in the upper third or upper quarter of the wide lines underneath the Gemara, v'chi be'eza medrash nogazeh, me'acha shenechlak, once the fabric was torn apart, which medrash did it touch? It didn't touch any medrash. Shere mago chavero eno mago. The fact that each half had been touching the other half before it was torn apart, that's not called contact. The fishu beis hastorim, the point of contact is within the strands of fabric, and that's covered, that's contained within. Elo im yesh lomar shish klum tuma mishuyeres alav. If you want to say that there's still some tumah that remains on this torn apart piece of fabric, lav mishumaga medrash, you can't describe it as having had contact with a medrash, says Rabbi Yossi. Rashi goes on, Eloshim noga bo hazav beragloi orum kishedorasolov olachar shedorasolov. If, let us say, a zav had trampled on it barefoot, or after he sat on it, he also touched it, Vahave olav shnei tumos, then this fabric, before it's torn apart, could be described as having two separate kinds of tuma. Tumas medrash, shi ava tuma, v'tumas mago, contact tuma, being that the zav had touched it, shi rishoina. Something that is tame only because of mago is called a rishon level of tuma, v'eino elo letame uchlenu mashkin. It's capable of communicating tumah only to food and drink. V'nechlak tohor, v'nechlak, and then that piece of 3x3 tefach fabric that had both been sat upon by a zav and touched by the zav is now cut in half. So tohor mitumas medrash, the tearing apart of it relieves it of tumas medrash. V'eino avatuma oid, it no longer has an avatuma status, which was capable of metama person. El avol tomei mago hazav kozman shelo tova v'nifchas mi shalosh etzbos. But Mago Hazav, it still has, as long as it hasn't been immersed or reduced to a piece less than 3x3 fingers in size. So at this point, we should have emphasized with the markings, when the Gemara said at the beginning, we have a long question marking that we just finished. You can see there's a shin at the to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. At the point of the that this question began, the Gemara had asked, should we say that the reason for the rest of the fetus becoming tomei as a result of the extended leg remaining attached till after the shechita was Rabbi Meir consistent with his personal reason of mago beis hastorim as communicating tumah, and we saw that described in the source that we just learned, and we also saw Rabbi Yossi disagreeing that the concept of communication of tumah through beis hastorim does not take place. So should we say that this sheet of Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah is we'll call it a characteristic Rabbi Meir? So the Gemara now responds and says, no, we're not going to say it's the characteristic Rabbi Meir. Lav itmar Allah, was it not said concerning this? Omar ula, loy shanu elo shloishal shloisha shenechlak. The machloikes Rabbi Yossi, where Rabbi Yossi disagrees with Rabbi Meir, is only with regard to something that was 3x3 tfachim and then split. Avol shalosh al shalosh habo'os mi beged godol. If you have a case of 3x3 expos of fabric, 3x3 fingers size of fabric that was torn off of a complete garment, that's habo'os mi beged godol, that came from a complete garment, a large garment that had been tomei medris. In other words, let us say you had a coat that was worn by a zav, and that coat is something that is considered a medris because clothing are designed to lean on them while you're wearing them. And the zav's coat had a piece of fabric, 3x3 fingers of fabric, ripped off from it. Even Rabbi Yossi will agree that there is tumah because... in other words, that the 3x3 piece of fabric will be considered tomei mago medris, because bishas prishason me'avihen mekablos tumo me'avihen. At the point that it's ripped off of avihen, means the original complete garment, at the point that it's ripped off, it's inevitable that it will have touched it while it was being severed or cut. Ha nami, so too with regard to the leg of the fetus, the extended leg, at the point that I cut it off, ha nami bishas prishason me'aver mikabel tumo me'aver, at the point that the fetus is separated from the limb, it's impossible to be careful that there is no contact after the separation takes place. Let us look at the Rashi, and we should beforehand emphasize, when there's contact after the separation takes place, that's no longer beis hastorim, because it's now the point at which it's cut is visible now. So we're saying that after the cut takes place, there is a subsequent contact made again. That is not beis hastorim, and it's at that point that the tumah is communicated. Let us look at the Rashi, toward the lower part of the Rashi commentary. Avol shalosh etzbos haboyin mi beged godol sheyo tomei medris. If you had a coat of a zav that has tumas medris, v'chotchem memenu shalosh etzbos, and you cut from it a piece of fabric measuring 3 fingers,
Tor hachticha tanim in a medrash, the little piece that 3 by 3 fingers in size is no longer medrash. When it's not, in other words, it's no longer capable of metama a person. She'ein bo kishiur, it's lacking the 3 by 3 hand breadth tefach in size right now. Utmeo mago medrash afilu Reb Yosi. Even according to Reb Yosi, this 3 by 3 finger size of fabric will have tumas mago medrash. Even according to Reb Yosi, domer ein mago hachibur mago, the fact that something merely is attached one to the other, like the case of fabric attached to itself, that's not called contact. Ha base hastorim hi, because the point of contact is invisible, is covered over, is contained within. However, hocha moide, in this case of the 3 by 3 etzbois of fabric ripped off of a coat of a zav, he will concede that there is maga medrash mishum de bishas prishasame aviv, at the point that the 3 by 3 finger amount of fabric is ripped off from the coat. E efshir litzamtzem shelo yiga me'at me'at. It's impossible that there's no continued contact as it's being ripped off. When it is being ripped apart, it is not covered anymore. And it will mekabel tuma from the original coat. Tuma will be communicated from the leg to the fetus, even according to Reb Yosi, because as you are cutting off the leg, there is continued contact. In other words, it continues to touch, even though it's cut. It's cut and then touches again as you are severing it, and that's what communicates the tuma. Ravina represents a second approach. We have noted a one by the expression on the third line from Bam Honami. This is the first of two approaches to explain how, in the case of the extended leg, the fetus is mekabel tuma even according to Rabbi Yossi. Now, Ravina has a different angle to this, and we're calling him therefore number two. He says, "Beged lav lechaticha koi." Garments are not designed to be cut. Therefore, we can understand that we would say there's no maga medrash. Therefore, Reb Yosi would take the point of view that there's no contact with medrash when you're looking at a piece of garment. Namely, the garment torn apart. The 3 by 3 tefach piece of garment isn't something that's expected to be cut. However, ubar lechaticha koi, the fetus, being that it's basically meat, is something that's eventually going to be cut. V'chala oimed lachtoch, something that is destined to be cut, kechotuch domi, is considered as if it's already cut. Therefore, this is not the case of the fetus is not considered a base hastorim, as we just said, because it's going to be cut. It's considered as if it's open and visible already. The idea that Ravina just expressed, that kol ha'omed lachtoch kechotuch domi, the Gemara raises a question and asks, should we say that this Hesber works out only according to Rebbe Meir, once again restricting it to one opinion, namely Rebbe Meir, as opposed to the Rabbanan? The Gemara will go on to say in its response that this Hesber works out according to the Rabbanan as well. So let us see now this discussion. Keman k'Rebbe Meir, is Ravina's explanation only according to Rebbe Meir? Disnan. We have a Tanaic source which describes vessels that have handles to them. Sometimes the handle is made, let us say, of a piece of wood that's longer than you really need it, and you're eventually going to cut it down to size. Kol yodos hakelim shehein arukos, handles of vessels that are too long, the osid lekatzitzon, and you're eventually going to cut it and reduce it in size. Let us say that we have a vessel with its too long handle that happened to have become tomei, and you need to bring it to a mikveh. Matpil ad mokomida. You have to immerse the vessel with its handle, but only up till the point of the useful length. In other words, you have a case of a vessel that that a bystander or onlooker would say it's not completely immersed. You didn't completely immerse its handle completely. You immersed it only till the point that you will find it useful. According to this opinion, which is understood to be Rebbe Meir, that is considered a complete immersion. In other words, even though you have part of the handle sticking out of the water, and we know that for an effective immersion to take place when dealing with a mikveh, the item must be completely submerged, why does Rebbe Meir make an allowance for part of the handle to be out of the mikveh water? That is because of this idea of, since it's going to be cut, it's viewed as if it's cut off already, and in your mind's eye, it's viewed as if it's not there. So that which has been immersed represents a total immersion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ad shiatpil es kulo. Well, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Rabbi Meir and says that you have to have the entire handle immersed as well. And that's a function of holding that of not holding kol oimed lachtoch kichotoch domi. So, should we say that Ravino's explanation of something destined to be cut off is viewed as if it's cut off is something that conforms only to Rebbe Meir? The Gemara says no. We don't have to limit Ravino's explanation to Shitas Rebbe Meir. Afilu tema Rabbanan. We can say that his idea conforms to the Rabbanan as well. Chibure oichlin. Chibure, the connection when it comes to food, to oichlin, food that's, let's say, a whole piece of whatever food item, that is keman demifrisi domi. It's as if it's been separated already. So when it comes to food, food is something that is, we'll call it not solid as like, let's say, handle of a vessel. And as Rashi explains, since the food is relative to vessel handles, is soft, it's not considered a full attachment. And therefore, the idea of applying, say, kol achotuch kechotuch domi to food is something that even the Rabbonan, who disagree with Rabbi Meir when it comes to vessel handles, would agree that it's considered already severed. Up till now, then, just to review, we saw Hezberim at the bottom of Ayin Beis Amid Beis to explain the ability of the leg to communicate Tuma to the rest of the fetus, even though on the face of things it would appear to be Mago Beis Hastarim. So we saw Ula's explanation that we called one, who said that, well, when it's being severed, there's going to be additional contact that you can't possibly avoid, and therefore, since at the point of contact, a point of severing, there's additional actual contact, it's no longer called Beis Hastarim. And we also saw Ravino's explanation that even without coming on to this concept of this description of actual contact, the fact that it's designed to be cut, it's considered as if it's cut. So the Gemara now says, well, Bishamo le'ula, I understand things are smooth according to Ula's approach. Hainu dekotoni chotcha. I understand why the Mishnah speaks about the actual cutting of the limb, and therefore, as a result of the actual cutting, it's no longer Beis Hastarim, and therefore Tuma is communicated. Elo l'Ravina mai chotcha, but according to Ravina, that Tuma is communicated even without it actually being cut off. Since it's going to be cut off, it's viewed as cut off, why does the Mishnah teach the cutting of the extended leg? The Gemara answers, Aidi the Tana Reisha Chotcha. Since the Reisha spoke about Chotcha, and that was a case that Chotcha, cutting, had to be taught. That was a case where the leg was cut off while the mother was still alive, namely before its slaughtering. And we said, well, if it's cut off before the slaughtering, there is no communication of Tumah, because live things don't absorb Tumah. So there, Chotcha had to be featured. Therefore, Tononami Seifa Chotcha, the Seifa also, when it spoke about the communication of Tumah, used Chotcha as its example. But as far as Ravina's understanding is concerned, even without it actually being cut, there still would have been communication of Tumah, even without saying that it's a mago base hastorim, because of the new idea when it comes to food, something that is food is viewed as if it's cut already. It's like kol ha'oymed lach to kuchotuch domi will apply to food according to shitos even beyond that of Rebbe Meir. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.